This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of September 13th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Saturday night is my partner, Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Hey, man, with all the bad things going on in the world, I can't complain. Just like Coco Ballantyne says, can't complain.
Well, that never stopped me, but I got nothing to complain about today.
Well, it never stopped me either, but I'm just saying it now. Be politically correct. You know I'm a professional complainer. I'm so good at it, I should make money.
Wow. I tell you that I actually do make money complaining, but I don't want to go there.
Okay. All right. Don't go there. All right. So, yeah, numbers are going down in the coronavirus in Tokyo. That's good. It looks like vaccinations are going up. But we're going to have a change of leadership here, too. So things are just going to be all mixed and weird for a while. So get used to it, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I've been talking with scouts the last couple of days, MLB scouts, and they're all like going, you know, how is this going to affect us? You know, what's going to happen? What can we do? And that's the thing that interests him the most is, well, I was asked, basically, how is the coronavirus going to affect the posting market? And I'm thinking, wow, I don't know. I don't think it's going to affect the Japanese guys. But, you know, he's just saying, like, MLB teams can't send their cross-checkers to Japan.
Mm.
So any guy who's sort of, like, suddenly on the radar will have to deal with that uncertainty factor. You know, Major League teams don't like giving contracts. You know, they pretty much don't like paying money to anybody but themselves.
Right, right.
So,
Well, we'll be able to ask some scouts when we get some of the off-season interviews going. But, yeah, it sounds like a good topic. So, anyway, on this week's show, we've got a chat with former NPB player and now scout Fernando Seguino. We're going to discuss the CL and PL races. And we're going to talk about the Friday night baseball porn that Jim and I were talking about before we went on mic. So, let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, on Monday Japan time and Sunday in the States, I had a chat with Fernando Seguino, who had a long career in Japan for the Oryx Blue Wave, the Nippon Ham Fighters, the Rakuten Eagles, and finally the Oryx Buffaloes.
Wow. Wow, and I just thought, you know, 2006 is the, I mean, 2007 he had a good season as well. 2006 was just when they won the Japan Series, which is awesome, and he was part of it.
Yep, he was. He was a big fan favorite in Sapporo Dome, and we touched on a number of subjects, you know, how of course, the coronavirus, we can't get away from it. You know, either in or out of interviews, and the answers are really, you know, good because they're, you know, they're human. So, you know, hearing people's, people's responses are always different and always an education. So we talked about that. We talked about baseball in Japan and touched on Shohei Ohtani. So let's have a listen to Mr. Fernando Seguino.
Our guest this week, after a long hiatus, is Fernando Seguino. And thank you so much for joining us.
Awesome. I appreciate it, Jim. Thank you for the opportunity.
Now, what's your current job?
All right. My current status right now is I'm been on year 4 with the Miami Marlins as a director of international operation for them. It's a job that I took over right after my 2 years with the Chicago Cubs, which was traveling a lot more to Japan and doing more of an international scouting. This job, it takes more out of my time, I would say, but I'm enjoying it. Traveling more south now with doing a lot of Latin countries.
Oh, okay.
I still, you know, because of the COVID and everything else, I've not go back overseas, but I'm doing more Latin countries. You're talking about homeland, Panama, I'm doing Mexico, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Dominican Republic, where we have our academy, all the young bucks, that's where they go to for the first or second season when they started professional baseball. And then depends on their development, they would actually come into the United States and come to Jupiter, where is their first stop to per se, for like draftees and 18-year-olds, where they start their season there. Rookie ball, mid IA, and then you go through AA, AAA, and eventually going into the major leagues.
Now, let me ask, how has the pandemic, tested you and your family?
Oh, man, great question. I think a lot of people, was tested differently. Mm-hmm. For us, luckily, none of our family got the virus. We kind of, I remember when it happened, when the whole entire world shut down, I was on a trip. I was actually coming on two trips. I went to Colombia for once, and then I jumped over to the Santo Domingo. On March 11, I was supposed to, I actually got a last flight out of Dominican Republic. And I'm not sure as you recall, March 13 is when the airports and everything shut down. So I was they wasn't going to open until another 3 months. I would have been shut down in Santo Domingo. But, we did went through the procedures. We as many family around here, and you could know that in Florida, it hit really hard. Mm-hmm. We shut down. We stocked up in Nourish. We was going into hurricane season already. Mm-hmm. We just stocked up on all that. And we didn't actually, we did one or two runs to the grocery stores. But we pretty much sanitized everything that we purchased. We cleaned the house daily. We would change your clothes in the garage and, when we go out and come back in and, we were super safe. I had my mom that flew in from Panama actually on the 13th when they shut down everything. So her vacation was 4 months of not seeing anything, just right in the house. Because of her age, we didn't let her leave anywhere. Right. She would go out there on the patio, but that's about it.
How lucky for Yvonne, 4 months with mother-in-law.
Yeah. The good thing is that they get along. So okay. we got some good cooking as well. It was on and off, we did a really cool thing where we would go through like different cultures and make dishes and keep it fun, play car games, watch movie. We had movie nights every other 2 days and, we make it fun. I mean, it was a long 4 months. I was just shut down in our house, but we find a way to have some fun. And then when it started to loosen up a little bit, we would take like bike rides, with our masks on and stuff like that. But we was blessed that none of our family did get the COVID.
Now, when you see Japanese baseball players transition to the States, or you see guys going to Japan like you did, you've got so much background knowledge and so much understanding of what they've gone through on both sides. What are the things that are going through your mind? What kind of questions do you ask yourself?
For the audience to understand what a player like me go through when I made my transition into Japanese baseball. It start with the culture and acceptance of where you're going to be playing for at least for the season. It make it harder when you start in a family, which is a lot of these players, because they're coming out of AAA or the major leagues, already established, they have a kid or they're, trying to. And so it's kind of hard. But at the same time, like what says, you start with acceptance and getting involved as quick as you can into the culture. For me, I think just by coming to the United States first and understanding the American way, I think helped me when I went to Japan, while I was open arms. The hard thing was the language barrier, because when I came to America, at least I could understand but not communicate effectively. So that was a process for me to go through. But now when I go to Japan, it was that and above. You know, it was all the above. It was the communication, was the culture, was the food, was everything else. So open up, you know, I start reading some books. I started trying to get as many words that I could. Believe it or not, I have about 150 words that I could just throw out there and see if anything stick. Just to communicate with my teammates and executives. And, you know, it was one of those things, just trying to make myself get into that culture as quick as possible. And then the other thing was getting in on the field, like getting on the field. Right. You know, that was just talking about the clubhouse and my surroundings. But once you get on the field, there was a total different way of playing the game and team first and not, you know, the name on your back. You know, it was about the team, you know, the name in front and the one and the harmony and playing as a team. And, you know, how many times I watched Mr. Baseball, for instance, just to get acquaintance to what was expected and chat to the elders that when I went to Japan, they would give me some advice on the same, you know, in terms of the baseball skills and how to live and play over there. So it's a lot go through your head. It's a lot go through your thoughts. And to just to get that first and then have to concentrate and you know, laying off a splitter, fork in the dirt, you know, with 3-0 count. When here in the United States, you're getting a fastball or 2-0 or 2-1, you know, hitters count. I wouldn't see a fastball. So, you know, all those things was so new to me, you know. So it was a big transition. Coming over here for Japanese players is the same. Is more the culture, is more feeling that they belong, proving that they could, you know, do as well as they do in Japan. And that's a big hurdle why – it could go south really quick is you don't get that acceptance. Right. You know, you don't get your teammate, why teammates, you know, game's over and everybody goes on their own. Where in Japan, we stick as a team, we eat as a team, we do things, you know, in groups. Right. Where here, you know, is the players only have their translator. And once you leave the clubhouse, then they got to deal with everything else that come with it. And if you have a bad day, 0-for-4, or you're a pitcher, and you give up 5 or 9 runs, then you got to deal with, you know, just talking with your translator about baseball or about other things, and it kind of, you know, you're not getting your break from the hard, you know, hard things of you know, being on the field and playing the game. You know, you need that break sometimes, and you, like, you need to switch off and real quick, and then just go back and do it the next day. So I think just for a little, I had a little anecdote there right here. We went when I was with the Oryx Blue Wave. We had a 2-game series in Taiwan, and just to see how the Japanese players was adapting to just Taiwan. I mean, we were 2 hours away. It's not America.
Right.
But just the food itself was hard for them, you know? And I was like, wow, like that's amazing how, you know, they didn't, you know, just the season of the rice, how they do it over there, and just the different flavors, and then the language, you know? So we become like helpers, you know, for them to understand and see how we was communicating, you know, and getting along and just still smiling. So I think it was a great open, you know, eyes for those guys that went over there. And for me to understand that, oh, they got to do this transition, even though, you know, it's just a couple hours away. Like, you know, here is you go a couple hours away, you still in America, or you know, a Latin country, but it's just 2 hours. It's not like we're going to Germany, you know.
Okay. When you see Shohei Ohtani, because nobody does things like Shohei Ohtani, when you see that, what kind of things run through your mind?
When I was working with the Chicago Cubs as an assistant international operation, one of my job was to follow Tani everywhere when I come into town. 2016.
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry. 16 and 17.
Mm-hmm.
And just I was seeing greatness before greatness. I don't know if that makes sense, but I was seeing someone do it in their own game, in their own country. You know, yes, he had the schedule was around him. He was you know, he didn't have to adapt. You know, he was doing, he was happy doing what he does. He's a baseball player. But to see what he was doing there, I don't know if any scout ever did this before, but there's one game I went into Sapporo and the game was canceled. He didn't pitch that day. And he, they told me he was going to pitch the following day, a day game in Fukuoka. I changed my flight and I went out to Fukuoka and watched him play. He lead off the game. He was starting pitcher. He went out and dominate. And his first at bat, he went upper deck.
Yeah.
Jim, you know what I did? I closed my notebook and I just watched the best player I ever seen in my lifetime. And I enjoyed the game. I clocked him 3-9. I mean, 3-8 down the first baseline. 3-8. Who does that? 6-4, 6-5. And then hit the way he hits, pitch the way he pitched, and graciously. Just watching how he works out, or the love of the game. And just to kind of close it out, well, I could go on and on with all the practices that CM does and the, you know, we had interaction and, you know, but I came back 2018. I already was with the Marlins and I get a call from New York Press and he asked me, hey, what about this Ohtani kid? And you know what I says? He's going to be the best player you ever seen in the major leagues. He's going to hit 280 with 20 home runs his first year. And he would pitch. And he said, can he do both? I says, I've seen it. I wouldn't relay who was the person that I was talking to. But I says, 280 with 20 home runs, and he's going to pitch well. And he says, are you kidding? You talking about Babe? I says, I don't know about Babe. I've seen footage about Babe, but I've seen the best player. This is one player I ever write up as a hitter, as a pitcher, when I was with the Cubs. And my supervisor and my boss called me up and said, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, this is the best hitter in Japan, and this is the best pitcher in Japan. I'm happy that he's proving that to others, why I've seen it before. And next thing you know, the following year, you know, he went through a little struggle like everybody else. He got to understand the league. He came with a high kick. He put down his foot. He was more balanced, more spread out. He was a smart kid that he was going to get it. He was going to figure it out. And because he's so graciously athletic, things was going to sink in, right? And there you go. Next thing you know, he called me up this year and said, wow, Fernando, you was on point with what you told me. But I didn't know, you tell me 20, he's hitting 40. I said, well, I just give you the first year. You would have asked me about following years. Then I might have thrown in some more numbers to you, but that's what I expect him to do, right? So there you go. That's a short brief about Ohtani and what he's doing. I think is amazing for the game. I appreciate. I watch him. It's tough for us in Florida to stay up, you know, that late and watch games. But I do, you know, in Major League Baseball, but I could get all the games. I replay them and watch his at bats. I'm amazed with what he's doing. Even though I'm not playing, I'm still learning from you know, his you know, mechanics and what he does out there. It's just amazing to watch, you know, and we should embrace it. I think is one of the best players, you know, in our era, doing things that I think nobody could even dream about. I know he's giving hopes to a lot of kids, a lot of young kids and athletes out there to you know, to follow his role.
Sure.
You know, he's a great role model. I think he's a great, great role model for everybody in baseball.
For everybody in baseball around the world. It's not just Japanese kids.
Exactly. Exactly. Everybody knows Ohtani. You go around in Dominican Republic, you see Ohtani shirts. You know, this is Latin kids down there who are full of, you know, all-stars and Hall of Famers. They're got Ohtani shirts in Dominican Republic, you know.
Wow.
So that's amazing. It's a movement. And you know, I love it. And I'm sure there's a lot of people, you know, I'm speaking for a lot of people that I think they're happy this is happening. You know, they could get to see this.
I have to ask about that then. What was your response the first time you saw the Ohtani shirts in the DR?
I asked the kid, does he know? Well, obviously, I don't know if they already, there was a present for him or anything, but I asked the kid, does he know who Ohtani is? And he says, oh, he's the best player in the major leagues. And this, you're talking about comparing Tatis Jr., you know, but they're following Ohtani. They're following what he does, his successes does. It's just amazing. I mean, you look at the Little League World Series just just happened a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, the fun part of it is when the game starts and they're interviewing the kids. And most of these kids were saying their favorite player was Ohtani. I mean, this is American kids saying their favorite player is Ohtani. Come on. Like, it doesn't get anywhere better than that. And I love it. Why, you know, part of me, I'm Japanese. You know, I got to say to you, my heart, I would never be nothing else but, you know, Panamanian Japanese. You know, that's you guys opened the door to me. And I was forever be, you know, grateful for that.
Well, the question and the last question I'll ask as a man of the world and of many cultures, what does that say to you about the good things that are possible? Because, you know, you grew up in Panama and you played in the States and adapted there and you adopted Japan to see this kind of love and acceptance for people who are very different.
Yeah. Jim, I think it's a two-way street. And the reason I said this is because, Bocas del Toro, Almirante, is a lot of people don't know this little town of, you know, you're talking about 600 people. Probably, I mean, with the census, it might go up a little more now, but there's a four-way street in my town, enjoying just playing the game on my dad's team, you know, and to see where I'm at and what I've done in what I accomplished in my career. I don't like to talk about myself. This is like, it's so uncomfortable. But just for the things that I've, you know, was able to do, but with open arms, you know, I'm going and taking, you know, I'm not saying risk, but taking, you know, the appreciation from many different cultures. And to stop in Japan and for the acceptance that I had there, you know, while I was there, made me feel like one of theirs and made me feel like I could, you know, be the baseball player that I thought I was when I was in America, which, you know, my opportunity was limited. That says volumes, you know, just to be there and, you know, I could say my career was fulfilled going to Japan. You know, and every time a young hitter or a young player, a baseball player asks me about Japan, I always says, you need to take that, you know, is you ready for it? You need to go there. You know, you need to take that chance because it's the greatest thing I ever had in my career. And I was able to play baseball. I was able to raise my family. I was able to, you know, learn a different culture, to have great friends. That was worth a lifetime. I mean, you can't put, I mean, I could write a book and still leave a lot of pages, you know, to write more on it. You know, that's just because of all this good thing that I went through there in Japan.
Fernando, thank you so much for taking your time and joining us on the podcast. And I promise you it won't be 6 years before the next one.
I appreciate it, Jim.
Okay. Thank you so much, Fernando. Now I had to cut some of the effusive honorifics that Fernando heaped on us.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He's such a gentleman. And, you know, just to be brief, I had to cut it out. I was blushing so much. But, you know, he kept saying, John, where are you? John, where are you? How come John's not here?
Oh, hey, Saggy, man. Soon, man. Hopefully we will see you soon. Last time I saw Segs, we were standing in Tokyo Dome. It was Fernando. It was Jason. It was Jason and me, and we were sitting, standing and just talking, shooting the breeze for a little while inside the dome, and he was there as a scout. He was going to go and watch a game. So yeah, that's the last time. And everything else since then has been email.
Well, it was just, I contacted him on Friday night about doing a chat or something. And it just so happened that he had the weekend off for Labor Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And that he was, I think he went to the
last weekend. Yeah.
Yep. So he was planning to leave for the Dominican Republic on Monday. So Sunday we could do it.
Nice.
But he's
catch.
Almost always on the road, and it just happened to happen. And he said, let's do it now.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, glad he was able to join. Thank you very much.
Yep. So what would you like to comment on?
Well, so listening to Seggy talk about making isolation fun with food and cooking, it made me want to get some samples. So feel free to, you know, send some recipes or some invites or something when this pandemic is over. Maybe we head over to get some of that food. But, and you know my relationship with food, it is not a close one. I have likes, and then that's about it. Everything else is a hate. So as long as it's not seafood, I will try it. But
when you said invitation, I have to something popped into mind. About 6 years ago, I went to Miami, mm-hmm. and I posted pictures on Facebook and such. And Seggy's wife, Yvonne, is on one of my Facebook friends. And so the next time I saw Seggy, he said, "You were in Miami. How come you didn't come to my place?"
Aha.
and it's not like real close, but it's, you know, like an hour away or something. But I
close enough. That's right.
I just don't invite myself, dude. Yeah,
because I didn't invite myself. Exactly. How
come? Exactly. But he did invite me, so I was thinking, yeah, I'm thinking that sounds really good. Different food every day of the week, cooked by my mom and grandma. Yeah,
man, it has to be nice. I will teach you one day the art of inviting yourself, unsuspecting, to your victim. Yeah, I'll teach you that. Anyway, I know. I like that. I know. What do you mean? You don't know?
Well,
I haven't done it to you yet.
I know you.
Okay.
And I know you have a way with doing, saying things and getting in good with people that I would never, ever dream of asking or saying. This wall would go up, and John's like going, he's just cruising through, and, he's like the VIP guest, and I'm looking on the outside and going, how did he do that?
just words, baby, just words. All right. So anyway, as far as the interview, when you hear a person who used to play professionally and is now scouting talent, and you can hear the drool in the interview. And I'm talking about when Seggy was talking about Shohei Ohtani. And I think the word that caught me was graceful when he talked about Ohtani. And I thought, now here's a player who was graceful in his own right. He's a big guy, Seggy is, but he was graceful. So it takes one to know one. He had a beautiful swing from either side of the plate. Seggy did, and when you hear him talking about how fantastic an athlete Ohtani is, and the admiration and the respect and the drool, of course, it's all apparent when he's talking. And the game that he referenced, I think you and I, we spoke about it on the show.
Oh, sure.
I remember specifically, and I remember watching it because I was late to the party because it was a leadoff home run, so I missed it. And I know that he hit it, and I tuned in a little bit after. I think it was still in the first inning, but he had already hit the home run and watched the game. But you and I talked about it on the show, and we were just, our jaws were open. We were drooling as well. So to have him talk about a game that we spoke about on the show brought back some memories. Yep. But you hear a scout saying these things, and I'm thinking, if you're a scout and you're coming over to see a star player you've heard about, whether it's Ohtani, whether it's Ichiro Suzuki, whether it's Hideki Matsui, somebody like that, person who's probably going to go over and have some success in the States, it's just a matter of what team gets him, as opposed to, will this guy be able to make it over there or not? Although that was the case for Suzuki, right? When he went over there, people were saying, is this guy going to be able to make it or not? But as it turns out, he did, as we all know. So, but it doesn't take a scout to see that kind of talent. I love the fact that he said, I closed my notebook, because you don't earn money as a scout by finding guys like Ohtani. That is not how you get paid. You get paid if you can see a guy like Tetsuto Yamada and say, that guy's going to be a star one day and a Tsuyoshi Shinjo or a Hirokazu Ibata. When you can get a guy like that and you can find players like that, that's how you earn your money as a scout. But everybody, I mean, even the guy from the movie – Trouble with the Curve. I don't know if you ever saw that movie with Clint Eastwood, but even that guy can figure out that Ohtani can play. So that is not not making any big impact on a team when you say, oh yeah, this guy's a good to draft. Yeah, and, you know, you're not going to get him, first of all, if you're in a small market, and you're not going to be able to pay the money eventually if he becomes a free agent over there anyway. So you're not getting him. But if you can find somebody else who is going to develop into a star, and of course, when we say is going to develop, we don't know. And the scouts make their best guesstimates, but the player has to work, the coaches have to coach, and the development, it just takes work on all sides for it to happen. And it has to be in there, though, and you have to be able to spot that. And so it was just so awesome to hear Seggy describe what he was going through and how he closed his notebook, because that's what you do. And then the projections that he gave, and the guy saying, hey, man, you sold him short. And Seggy said, no, I didn't. You only asked me for first-year projections, bro. I love it. It was fun. It was a really fun interview. It was good hearing his voice, good hearing him talk about all those things in a good chat.
Yeah, that blew me away, because it almost, and I know enough about Fernando to know that he's not blowing his own horn.
Right.
Because he gets uncomfortable doing that. And almost every time you ask him about something he did, he wants to deflect it to something somebody else did.
Right.
So it's always about this person helped me, that person helped me, this person guided me, I learned this from this person. But his explanation about Ohtani is so contrary to what scouts do. Scouts are taught to be skeptics. Well, skeptics to a point, you know, to see what's there, but also be skeptical of, to ask themselves hard questions. And I'll be honest, there was basically zero chance that, of course, when Ohtani came out of high school, there was zero chance he was going to be anything but a pitcher in MLB.
Mm-hmm.
And
say why. The reason.
Well, because he threw 100 miles an hour.
Well, that too, but because people were going to limit him. They were going to try to limit
him. Sure, yeah. Exactly, because that's what was done. And even in 2016, and Matt Winters, I don't think, you know, he's admitted to this. He said, look, no team's going to pay a couple million dollars for some guy who can throw 100 miles an hour and let him bat. And this is 2016 after, you know, he'd seen what Ohtani did for the team he works for.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, we're sitting, he's going, look, it ain't going to happen. But of course, it's all about leverage. So, but for Fernando, you know, seeing that this guy could do both at the same time is a huge thing for me. You know, lights went off when he said that. I'm going, wait a second. You know, I didn't ask him to, you know, give me his phone records to prove he said it. But I'm going, I would bet, and he's the only scout. He might well have been the only one of 20 or so plus scouts. And I would even throw Billy Epler, who was then a scout with the New York Yankees, in as one of the guys who thought that Ohtani would do one or the other. I mean, you know, oh, well, he might, but it's, you know, there's always that speculation. It's Japan. You know, this isn't MLB. This is Japan and, you know, whatever. So that was the thing that blew me away. The other thing, I guess, was I learned so much. I learned quite a lot about, I mean, I've known and talked to Fernando for quite a long time. But I'm thinking now, yeah, 2002, so it's 19 years. And what I learned was how much being a part of something bigger than yourself, how important that is to him. Because of the way he answered the questions about, you know, how do you adapt? You know,
sure.
Japan... you know, he loved the focus, the stated focus on harmony and being part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about how when you adapt to a new game, so much of that challenge is on top of the physical skills, it's on the acceptance and the communications and reaching that sort of achieving some level of understanding with your teammates.
Right. Right. So, the human quality, not just the throwing of the ball and the catching of the ball and the hitting of the ball, but the people behind all that.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. So that was what really struck me.
Yeah. Well, it was a fun chat, and I'm glad you got it done, and hope we can get an interview for next week. But making a seamless transition, let's talk about you want to start with the Pacific League or the Central League?
Let's start with the Pacific Leagues and see.
All right, let's do the Pacific League races. So now keep in mind that September is usually used to, it has a lot of rain makeup dates on the schedule, and things kind of get choppy. But what that does is it allows for some teams to shuffle pitchers. If you send a player down for 10 days, he doesn't have to miss as many games as he might. The schedule is really normal and it's heavy. You get 10 games over the 2-week period. Perhaps you only get 4 or 5 that a player has to miss because there's some makeup dates in there. So the schedules do get choppy, but I tell you this, it was too bad that this series took place early in the week, but the Buffaloes and the Marines started the week down in Kobe and had this 1-win, 1-tie, and 1-loss series. And it was so exciting. All the games were fun. And it just made it look to me like these are going to be the teams that battle it out in the final week for that top spot. It looked like that to me. I don't know. Maybe that was just me hoping, in part because I picked the Marines to win the Pacific League. So I'm hoping that they're going to be there at the end.
Yeah, it was a good series. I mean, it was as close as could be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with ninth inning, you know, both teams had late rallies.
Right.
Every game had a late rally. A lot of heroics, a lot of backstories. Both teams went into the series missing big players.
Mm-hmm.
So Kyoto Fujiwara, the Pacific League's a batter of the month, the months for July and August, is out with a calf injury because he got hit by a pitch. And Masataka Yoshida, you know, the all-star Japan Olympian, is missing because he pulled something running to first base in a come-from-behind win on Sunday. Saturday.
The back, and, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they were gone, and in the first game, Adam Jones was deactivated due to side effects. And the kid they brought up to replace him, they pulled him out of his minor league game.
Juice!
On Tuesday afternoon, in the middle of the game, they put him on a Shinkansen so he could get to Kobe and hit a home run in his first at bat.
Juice!
And I think he hit a home run in his first at bat last year. And he hit a home run in his debut game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's just the irrepressible Seiichiro Oshita. And he also
Juice. Nicknamed him Juice.
I know you did. I'm not a fan of that, but you know what?
Hey, he brings the juice, man.
I think you know he's a dead ringer for. He's not exactly a dead. Physically, he's not the big strong body. He's more of a smaller, compact version of Hiratoshi Kitagawa, who was like one of the biggest smiles in professional baseball.
Yeah, and, a goofy kind of happy-go-lucky smile. Yeah,
kind of like, and it looks like sometimes it looks like the head is attached to his body by a spring, like a bobblehead. Because it's just so always bobbing his head. It's just like always nodding in approval and smiling and full of emotion. And I just love it. So he had a big, you know, he was one of the game's heroes. And Takashi Ogino was one of the big heroes of the series. And it was just a fun series all around.
Yeah. So what I took away was it's obvious to me that the Buffaloes have this bullpen issue, but the thing is they can throw a number of guys at you, so they might be able to cover it slash overcome it because they can match up as they go along. And if they do, you don't know who you're going to face. A lot of times the pitcher, remember I said in the Central League, usually it's a song and dance. The managers know who the other manager is going to bring in at what time. And so everybody's pregame, they're in their meetings, they're talking about, okay, you're going to face this guy, he's going to throw this in this count and blah, blah, blah. When you get to the Buffaloes, you might get one guy, but you might get somebody else because they just run in a bunch of guys and they're throwing a lot of guys at you. But it is a weakness. I think they're covering it well, and I don't think it's a huge issue. But the other issue I'm looking at is you've got the rookie pitcher, Hiroya Miyagi, who has really never pitched this much in his life in a year. And then you've got Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who looks like the Sawamura Award winner this year. So those two guys starting off a series, that's pretty good. After that, you don't really have a shutdown, shutout guy. So if any team really needs to win the pennant to probably advance in the playoffs or have a better chance at advancing in the playoffs, I think it's the Buffaloes, because if you look at the Chiba Lotte Marines, they have probably a bunch of guys who fit into the same category as pretty good, but nobody great. But they're always going to bring out somebody who's pretty good. I think Ryan. No matter, maybe not always, but most of the time they're going to bring out in a playoff situation. If they can go to like four guys, maybe five if needed.
Yeah, there are going to be some surprises there. And the one of the things about the Buffalo's pitchers, I'm going to mention this another guy's name whose name escapes me, but. Yeah, he's a 22-year-old, I think.
Yeah,
and he's a rookie also, and he was just devastating. I mean, he was. They were talking about how he was just dominating a really good. I mean, of course, Hiroya Miyagi. You know, he throws he's basically very aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't have that big, powerful fastball. You know,
he doesn't.
He works off of that slider, which is really good. And, mm-hmm. He uses the fastball pretty much to set up the slider sort of that crossfire. So that's his name of the game and being precise. But this guy had Yamasaki had a just a wonderful fastball. I mean, that thing was a bomb. The way and very much like he looked very much like Yoshinobu Yamamoto on Thursday. Yeah. I think it was Thursday he pitched. Let me just
check. Soichiro Yamasaki. Yeah. He looked good, but he's young, and I believe the announcer said he's coming off of surgery as well. Yeah, in fact, it's written here, so he's coming off of some right arm surgery. So.
Yeah,
I don't know that that's reliable, but yeah, he might get a start, and then they'll piece it together down the stretch of that game. So
And one game isn't a season, because nobody was looking for him to have a breakthrough game. And next time, people are going to be looking for the things he did well,
mm-hmm.
which we're going to get to that subject in a moment when we talk about Roki Sasaki.
Oh, okay, yeah. So yeah, they're looking good though. The Eagles, as we suspected, and they had that situation today. They lost to the Marines at Zozo Marine Stadium, and just having trouble scoring against pretty good pitchers. And so today it was Kazuya Ojima, and I think you called it early on in the Pacific League prediction show when you said they're going to have trouble with some left-handers, and it was on display tonight. They just, obviously Ojima pitched well and he was hitting spots and that can happen, but they just didn't seem to know what they were going to get. And they just were very meek offensively tonight. And that's the problem with the Eagles. And so if any of these four teams that are pushing for the three playoff spots, and I know the Hawks always look, they always look like they're going to wake up and beat you. Even when you have them down, except for today when they gave up 16 runs and with about five outs. I couldn't believe it. I could not even believe it. But yeah, They only had five outs and they had allowed 16 runs. Mama didn't say there'd be days like this, I don't think. But anyway.
Not in Fukuoka, they don't. No.
No.
The last thing to add about the Eagles is, as we mentioned, the lefties. And the other little drama that's been going on with the Eagles is, where's Hideto Asamura? Well, and the answer is, he's been on the bench. And because
he's picking splinters out of his butt.
Because of his quote unquote form. And they replaced him with a kid from the farm team who's played really well, considering he's basically basically a minor league, one of these guys, minor league cup of coffee guys, and he had a really fantastic week, but he's not but he's batting eighth or ninth. And with the lefty today, they did put Asamura in the lineup, and he did get a hit, which is more than he's been doing a lot. But I sense something weird about that whole thing. But part of it may be that manager and general manager Kasuhisaishi is not like the most comfortable person explaining things in the media. That we don't we don't know much of that story. I don't know.
Yeah, well, something to keep an eye on. But yeah, the Eagles have their issues a little bit. So they're the one that I can easily see falling out and allow. I mean, because it just looks to me, and of course, the Hawks have been beating the heads in their Pacific League foes for decades now. So it's no surprise that they're all ganging up and they really want to keep them out. So keep them out of the playoffs, because if they don't get in the playoffs, there's no way they can defend a title for a fifth consecutive year. So no surprise that people are going at him hard, but the way the fighters went at him today, I hope they left enough for, because you know what happens, you score that many, you score months worth of runs in one game.
Oh, the funniest quote today was, geez, we score that many runs, we absolutely have to win this game. We can't lose this game.
I don't think you can even worry about losing the game.
Well, no,
lose.
I think
it's focus.
I think that was Hideki Kuriyama, the manager, said, like, we absolutely have to win this game when we score that many runs, meaning nothing's a sure thing in Nippon Ham Fighters land.
No, not this year. I think they've got some players, though. I think they're going to be better next year. But, yeah, the Marines, I still think they're going to have to figure out their rotation when they go forward into the playoffs. If they happen to be fortunate enough to win the pennant, I think that kind of sets them up. But still, do you know who would – I mean, their first two starters in the playoff situation would be? I don't think it matters, again, like I said, because everyone's so close – in terms of their production, that it's just a matter of maybe trying to match up a little bit better depending on what team they play.
Well, they did get a good sign, which was Ayumu Ishikawa didn't look like he hadn't pitched in 4 months.
Yeah, he looked fairly good.
He came back from shoulder cleaning surgery that he had in June. I guess it wasn't a very invasive procedure because he was razor sharp.
Mm.
So that's a good sign for them. Kota Futaki, excuse my language, I can't have him stumbling on names. Kota Futaki had a really good start. Lots of things are, there's no real flaws with that team right now. I think that's probably the best way of putting it. They don't have any serious weaknesses. I mean, Rakuten, we can say, well, their closer's gone for a month and they don't score runs, but the Marines are a pretty solid offensive team. And they've got a great closer.
Yep. Yeah, they're set up to go. They're looking good in terms of maybe finishing this thing out. But, I was going to bring up Ishikawa. He gave up that home run to Yutaro Mash Sugimoto. But, there's no harm in that. That guy is I think he's tied for the league lead now in home runs, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure what happened.
He was tied. I don't think any of the league leaders hit a home
run. Right. And Ishikawa did give up 7 hits in 6 innings, so it was a little hit heavy, but 1 walk and only 1 K, but 2 runs allowed. So that's a good start for him. And
his pitches were good. His control was good. I thought they were live. I thought he was live. I mean, the home run he gave up was not the worst pitch I've seen get hit for a home run. So
yeah. So yeah, Futaki, maybe gets a start. And like I said, if after that it's, you know, who they want to match up against, whatever the opponent is, because like I said, you know, it could be Manabu Mima getting a start because he'll give you a decent start. So, but if they win the pennant, that'll turn things, that'll make things difficult, because I think they have the best pitching, up and down, in the Pacific League right now, in terms of, you know, they've got good starters, they've got decent guys coming out of the bullpen, and they've got a pretty reliable closer. And those are key elements, I think, if you're going in the playoff situation. You want to move over to the Central League?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Central League now. It's just really weird. I have to say this. It's really weird to see the Giants, who usually at this time of year, and they've done it, they brought in some foreign help. They brought a Yodai Kong, came up and he was playing. They're pulling all the strings and the usual suspects and things that they usually do, but they're not getting the results. And they had some trouble last weekend holding leads against the Tigers and ended up not winning a game in that series. They went 0-2-1. And then this week they looked bad against the Bay Stars. And I don't want to disrespect the Bay Stars because they have a really good offense, although the Dragons shut them down pretty good when they played them. But they have a pretty good offense. And they made me start to think that something is really, really wrong with Tomoyuki Sugano. I watched the first inning on Tuesday when Sugano made that start in what turned out to be a loss. And I thought, you know, he's not long for this game. He got through the first inning without allowing a hit, but he didn't look good. And I didn't think he was long for the game. And somehow on guile and just being a savvy pitcher, he worked into the middle of the game. But he was wobbly, in my opinion, and I don't even know some of his pitches. I don't know what they were supposed to be because they didn't do much. They just kind of spun and hung sometimes, or they just didn't move. And
yeah, we've seen this year. He's had these games where, oh man, he's back. You know, his start before that. Well, two things were noticeable about that. From the fourth to the sixth inning, he looked like his old self. Okay, that's the weak part. The weird thing was that from the first to the third inning, he was throwing this cutter that I don't ever remember seeing. He had Mariano Rivera's cutter for three innings,
mm-hmm.
and he was just eating people alive with it. It was like Terminator quality stuff.
Okay,
and. But, you know, it's something I'm not used to seeing from him. It's a pretty rare pitch for him, but it was just killing people and then disappeared, and we haven't seen it since. And he had good velocity. His velocity has been good since he got back. He was touching 151 or something the other day, which is good for him. But things are not working. You know, yeah. It's clunky. It's the form is bad. Stiffness is there. I think I don't know, but you know what it looks like to me is he's having trouble recovering from his starts.
Well, yeah, you know,
because when he has a lot of time off, he comes back and he does really well. But it seems like when he's, you know, working on 6 days rest, he seems to have trouble. He's going to be on 5 days rest tomorrow. So.
Yeah, and this is, yeah, we see a lot of, like I said, a lot of shuffling of pitchers and guys arranging their pitching, trying to match up. But he gave up 7 runs the other night, 7 hits. He struck out 7, but he walked 3 and he hit 2 guys. It was not pretty. 4 1/3 innings, and they ended up losing that game 8-2. So the Tigers, conversely, have picked it up a little bit. They went into Carp Land and they've won these 2 games in that series. They did something, though, the other day, I think that was kind of surprising, and maybe not surprising if you look at the numbers, but they had to deactivate Teruaki Sato, the hard-hitting rookie who has a bunch of strikeouts. And I think we mentioned this on the show before, and I said, look, he has a bunch of strikeouts, but I think the record they're comparing him to at the time, I don't remember when who had the previous record, but weren't they playing fewer games by about, it wasn't that many, right? But fewer games by about 5 or 6 in a season?
Well, it depends. Oh, you're talking about the record for
the record for strikeouts players? For rookies. Yes.
No, that record I was not familiar with, but no.
Yeah. I think they were playing fewer games. It was quite a ways back, but I'll check and we'll get back to you on it next week for sure. But yeah, he strikes out a lot. Yes. He's going through a slump. Yes. It's no surprise. He's a rookie, but yeah, they deactivated him and I'd rather see him get his swings in on the farm than to sit around on the bench on the top team. But what do you think? I don't remember a slumping player who's a rookie winning the Rookie of the Year award. Do you think this really damages his, in the eyes of the media here, his chances to win that award?
No, because
if he's down for the minimum, yeah. If he's down for the minimum 10 days.
Right. Essentially, he's already won it. And then basically he has to come back and do something. I don't think as long as he comes back at some point and does something. If he hits, you know, all he's got to do is come back and show up and play. And then people are going to say, I think it's very likely that people are going to say, well, geez, look at all he's already done. He's already Rookie of the Year. I mean, let's put it this way. Compared to most Rookie of the Year position players, he's already heads and tails above most of them.
Yeah, but
I mean, let's put it, let's first-year players, obviously, you can't match him with the guy who was 3 years younger playing for the Yakult Swallows in his second year at 38 home runs. Now, you can't compare him with that guy, but you can. But he's, you know, he's far ahead of most guys who get that. So I think he's already won it unless he... If he doesn't play again for the rest of the season and like Shugo Maki goes on a tear or
Kurumada. Now, you know, he's already set a record for first year players getting 100 hits.
Right. And he's hit for the cycle.
You know? Oh, I didn't mention that. I know you love that, but I didn't mention
that. I don't care, but other people do. So I'm just saying, does it matter? Well, it doesn't matter to me.
I don't know, man. I would say, yeah, he had won it before we took this break. But coming out of the break, the All-Star/Olympic break, he hasn't hit well. He has joined in with the poor defensive play of the rest of the Tigers. So they're not leading by a good example. They're leading by poor example. And he has joined in on that. I think he's lost some points. And certainly, if he does come back and still continues to slump, I think somebody could pass him, including Takumi Nakano, his own teammate, who doesn't have numbers, sexy numbers, but he was there all year, and that's gonna play. But the Japanese media is so fickle, don't you think? I just think that they're gonna love the last thing they see, and if they see Ryoji Kuribayashi go out and save the last three games of the season for the Carp and the Carp win, then that's gonna win it for him. If they see Shugo Maki go out and get four hits in the last game of the season, he'll win it if he has a better batting average, which he'll probably finish with. And if it's, you know, someone else doing something, I just think the media is fickle. And you know, you set a record for strikeouts and you miss games and you slump in September when the team really needs you and they don't win the pennant. I think that's a couple of black eyes on your face.
Okay. First of all,
for Japanese media, not for me.
No, but I think people, if it comes to rookies, people don't care about strikeouts. The managers care and the players care. But I think in the end, if you've got a guy who hits, you know, 28 home runs as a rookie, you're going to say, damn, dude. And who cares if he strikes out 150 times? The rookie.
I think they care because they care about all the sexy numbers. They care about the numbers that are not sexy too. I think they care. I think they care more than you think they care. But we will see.
I don't care.
I know. You don't care what they care about. I know you don't. I know you don't.
We're just sharing. Sharing and caring, baby.
All right. Well, let's talk about Friday if we're going to care about something, because Friday was just a game I really cared about a lot. And that this is combining As the Pitch Turns with Rockin' Roki. And Masahiro Tanaka and Roki Sasaki faced off against each other for the first time on Friday night. It was the Marines playing the Eagles at home at Zozo Marine Stadium. I was just enthralled with this game. I mean, I was completely enthralled, and it was one of the greater investments I've made in a 3-hour period in my life this year. It was baseball porn, baby. And I was all in. Let's just say I had to keep the kids out of the room.
You can say that if you like.
I will. Okay. All right. So, you know, I was impressed with Sasaki. Obviously, he had no hit the Eagles for 5 innings, or was it 6? But yeah, he pitched really well. He let it fly a few times. We got some of the faster. I think he topped out at 158. Is that what you had?
Okay. Yeah, 98 something.
Yeah. Okay. So, like I said, it wasn't the fastballs though. For me, I thought that the biggest thing that impressed me was he was finishing his off-speed pitches. He really finished strong with them. And he, like I said, he mixed in some of those bullets, but I think this is the guy that Tadahito Iguchi, the skipper, and Masato Yoshi, the pitching coach, I think they envisioned having this guy be strong, be healthy, and be at the top of his game for where he is as a young pitcher, as a young player, by this time of the season. This is the guy they envisioned because he pitched really well. He probably deserved to win, but Masahiro Tanaka wasn't bad either. But what did you think about Sasaki?
It was an interesting contrast because his control, his command wasn't that good.
Mm-hmm.
It was about as good as we've seen it. But one thing that set him and Tanaka's command was a little better.
Mm-hmm.
But when Sasaki missed, he missed with better stuff.
Okay.
So he got away with, he missed badly a couple times in the first inning, but after that, his mistakes really weren't that egregious. The home run was a bad pitch. But what struck me about him was there's a thing about where you throw your splitter in Japan. You basically, the catcher holds a glove right at the knees, even below the knees. And the splitter is supposed to be a swing and miss pitch that if they don't swing and miss it, it's going to be hit weakly. It's going to be hard to hit because it's low and out of the zone.
Mm-hmm.
Sasaki was just pretty much, I'm going to throw it in the zone and you just kind of see if you can hit it. Because he was rearing up and people had to be aware of the fastball, and he'd throw that splitter right down the middle of the zone, right in the middle of the zone.
I did notice that, yeah. And he fell in love with doing that because he did it a lot.
I think what we're going to see is people, what they do in Japan is there'll be somebody going up there saying, you know, throw me that splitter down the pipe and I'll show you what I can do with it. But nobody expects that. So that's going to be an adjustment teams are going to be making. So when I was mentioning Soichiro Yamasaki and the pitches he did, you know, he's going to have to adjust. He was facing a team that was completely unprepared for what they were getting. I think the Eagles had no idea what they were going to get from him. They were expecting the fastball. They were looking for fastballs, and they were having trouble hitting him because his fastballs were better than they've been.
Mm-hmm.
He was getting better spin on his fastball and people were missing it and just barely getting the bat on it. So when he threw that splitter and his slider was quite good as well, and he was pretty much throwing everything he could in the zone.
And he's got that live arm. It's just, you know, I think a lot of guys went up there thinking, well, we got to be ready for the fastball. But
yeah,
like you said, that he was throwing that little floating splitter, or I was calling it a forkball, but it was
same difference.
Yeah. And it was looking good. And he threw it right. Like you said, he attacked him in the zone with it. He said, I'm not bouncing anything. You can't hit this because you're not looking for it. So,
well, I think the catcher was missing up a little bit. He was missing up a lot, but it's like, yeah, who cares? They were all looking fastball and he was throwing splitters. So there will be adjustments to that moving along.
Right. And then go ahead.
And Tanaka was, he threw a few more fastballs. We saw a few more good fastballs from him that we're used to seeing recently, but it was still mostly sliders. mostly sliders, mostly cutters. I think he got burned on a two-seamer that kind of flattened out in the zone. Yeah, I mean, he was good. I mean, he's dogged. The thing with Masahiro Tanaka is you don't know what, you know, even you don't, nobody's worried about his fastball. I'll be honest, nobody's really worried about Masahiro Tanaka's fastball anymore. That's 2013.
That's so,
go ahead. And so it's basically, I'm going to make you think I'm going to throw the fastball and then you're going to get a slider, and people are sitting on sliders, but he pitched well. I mean, both of the runs he gave up were on mistakes, but one of the runs happened because somebody just had a really good swing on a good pitch and, you know, and got into scoring position because he got a low percentage swing on a, you know, a tough pitch, and he got a hit off of it. And then Tanaka made a mistake with a runner on second.
Yep. So both guys pitched 8 innings. Both of them allowed 2 runs. Tanaka threw 120 pitches, gave up 4 hits, struck out 7, and had a walk. Sasaki threw 99 pitches, allowed just 2 hits, had a career high 9 strikeouts, and the 8 innings were also a career high for him. So he had never gone that deep into a game. So it was just really fun. I don't know if they're going to match up again this season. I'm just hoping it happens. And if it happens again, it's really going to be for a lot of, you know, not maybe sure. not the whole prize, but it's going to have a lot riding on it. So
the worst thing about it was, it wasn't the worst thing. Of course, Brandon Laird, who we haven't even mentioned, hit 2 home runs in that game, and scored the first run of the game with a home run, and hit the last run of the game off of Tomohito Sakai, you know, who's sort of the one of the grab bag of relievers.
Grab bag, you're right.
Well, yeah, it is.
You.
Well, basically, yeah.
You, it's your turn. Yeah.
I think so. I think they've got a lottery out there in the bullpen.
Well, because Yuki Matsui, yeah.
Yeah, he's out for probably another 3 weeks at least. Yeah. So they don't know who's going to come out, and Sakai was very good, but he made a mistake, and that was the tie game that they lost. And the thing was, because Laird hit the sayonara home run, he was the hero interview, you know, not the non-winning pitcher Roki Sasaki. But this morning I was reading the reports, and after the game, Roki Sasaki, who grew up in Iwate Prefecture, which is the up there in Tohoku land next near Miyagi, near Sendai, where Rakuten Eagles won a championship, and he grew up idolizing Masahiro Tanaka. And he said, you know, I was thinking about, you know, how unreal this all was. And even if I was, you know, even if you told me when I was a kid someday you might have a chance to pitch against Tanaka, I wouldn't have believed you.
Wow. Wow. And his team won the game. And I mean, you know, we were talking about this before we went on mic as well. And I said, well, for me, it turned out well, because the team that I had chosen to win the pennant got the win, but both of these guys pitched well. So two guys I'd like to see pitch, and they pitched well, and then neither one of them had to lose the game.
No, great game. I just thought they just pitched so well. It was a perfectly, it was a wonderful game to watch. And it was, you know, the sad thing is neither won, but, you know, well, we won, as they say. It was the fans were the winners in this one.
Certainly.
The last thing I have to say about it is that one of the other things I saw this morning was a former Marines analyst saying, you know, Sasaki's ready. Skip the 10 days off. You know, he's now on a deactivated after every start. So he goes back to the farm team and he comes back 10 days later and pitches. So he's saying, skip it. He's ready to go on 5 days rest for the rest of the season.
Settle down there, Sparky. Yeah.
And Tadahito Iguchi said, not quite. So he was deactivated on Saturday.
Yeah. Settle down there. He's still young. Yeah, he's still young. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, so apparently I said something on the show last week about, I don't know, not getting enough feedback. So I appreciate everyone. I did. I shouldn't say apparently, because I
okay. Yeah,
it
well,
was recorded.
It was what we would call a fine California wine.
Hashtag high heat.
Yeah, you people up there in Northern California have a lot of open space there. We have more industrial things down in Southern California or areas.
You can
down
still
in
wine. You can still wine.
But we do have some places where we have vineyards and we can wine with the best of them.
Yeah, well, that wasn't the wine I was talking about. Okay.
Okay. All right. So so appreciate it. We got a lot of high heat came in from, we had a four-pronged attack here. The Twitter site, we had email, the Facebook account, and Reddit, because we do have a Reddit account as well. So
I think I got a Telegram.
Well, if you find it, let me know. So the first one this week comes from ID Haydell at Texan Crusader, and that's via Twitter. And he says, in regards to the season, the number of ties seem to be messing with the rankings at the top of each league. What is y'all's take on how the ties weight, especially given their increase due to COVID restrictions? The player interviews have been moving and insightful. Hashtag high heat. All right, so thank you for this, ID. We go to great pains to bring you content that is not just about the balls and the strikes and the wins and the losses. We try to give you some substance. We try to give you some depth. We try to give you some insight, and we try to just entertain and have fun with baseball. Win or lose, you know, your team winning and losing. Hopefully you can learn about what's going on here in Japan and in Japanese baseball. So we appreciate the feedback. As I said on Twitter for someone else, I think it was, who sent in a question, I said, feedback is our fuel, because I was starting to think that people were not either, they weren't listening or they didn't care. And so when you guys responded like this, it's definitely fueled me for sure. I'm sure it got to Jim as well. So
made my heart soar like an eagle, baby.
All right. Steve Miliband. As for the ties, I think I brought it up the first month of the season because I noticed we were on track for having a lot of ties. And so I think I brought it up at that time. And you look at the CL and you look at the standings, and you'll see something very interesting happening in the Central League, because you've got the Tigers that are out there with 61 wins, and that's 10 more wins than second place Yakult. But the Tigers only have 4 ties. So they have all these wins, so it's going to be almost impossible. I think we have about 30 games left for most of the teams, maybe a little bit more than 30 for the Swallows, but 30-plus games, let's say. It is going to be almost impossible for Yakult to make up, to catch them in wins with 61, because the Tigers are not going to lose that many games, so they're going to have to get more than 61. It's just going to be really hard. However, the winning percentages can shrink because of these ties, and I say the shrink because the Tigers can keep winning, but it's not going to add that much to their winning percentage, whereas with all the ties that the Swallows have, each win is going to be weighted heavily for them, or weighted a little bit more, not mm-hmm. heavily, but a little bit more. So if they can push up the wins in this last three, four months of the season, it could make a difference. But in terms of, look at the Giants as well, the Giants have 52 wins, so they have actually more wins than the Swallows, but they have more ties as well. They have 15 ties, and their winning percentage is in the range where they might be able to get close. But winning percentage wise, I just don't see anybody catching the Tigers right now. That's going to be tough. But what did your numbers find, Jim?
Well, I thought about this because in Japan they ignore ties, so a tie is a game that essentially doesn't count. One way or
doesn't
the other.
Doesn't not hurt.
Right. And in some previous years, they counted a tie as half a win and half a loss when they calculated winning percentage.
Mm.
And I thought, well, what would it look like if I did that here? And the answer was not much. Basically, the more ties you have, the more it drags you towards 500.
Mm.
So the increments are so tiny that it doesn't really matter. It is really only going to matter if, you know, two teams are, there's no game difference between the two teams. Then the ties might, let's say, the Tigers and Giants as no games difference between them. They're separated by winning percentage. And if that was, if the Giants were to get half a win and half a loss for all those ties, they would be pulled towards 500 more than the Tigers would be. So that's the only thing. But my answer, it doesn't matter too much. Of course, actually, all the ties do matter. They change the, you know, the nine-inning COVID restrictions means tons of ties. We'd have, I think I calculated about three times as many games tied after nine innings now as there were 2 years ago when we had 12-inning games.
Right.
Teams.
Three times.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously, you know, what's a tie mean? It means if you're Tatsunori Hara, you have a little alarm there saying it's the seventh inning. I should be on my fifth reliever by now.
Hashtag high heat.
Which has shown us some fairly interesting shenanigans this year.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you know, I look at the Giants as well. They have a bunch of ties, but I don't know, man. I think it's going to come to the end where if some teams are close, like you said, they might play a factor. Otherwise, probably not such a big deal. It's just wasted time, in my opinion. You see these guys battle it out, and then they walk away with a tie. So, all right, the next question comes from Paul, and this was via email, and he's in Calgary, and he says, when Tiger Higgins mentioned the massive impact Satoshi Nakajima had on the Buffalo's record this season, it piqued my interest. Outside of running a bullpen, analytics really seem to be downplaying the impacts of managers. So how much of an actual impact on record do you think Nakajima has had? Do you think their record would be massively different if you dropped, say, Akihiro Yano or Shingo Takatsu to start the season? Jim. Mm.
Well, interesting that you picked the two guys that I'm so fond of praising on the podcast. But, yeah, of course it would be different because Nakajima, like Yano and like Takatsu, was intimately familiar with the their team's farm, minor league farm team. So they have, all three of them have that in common. They know all the young players. The question is, are there analytics to measure how good they are? And I think there are. I think we've been sort of moving around this. It's very difficult when you see a player do well. Is it, you know, how much of the influence the manager has? Well, people do make a difference. And Bill James had a very, I think, insightful, I think it's hard to replicate, or it's hard to figure out a good way to do it. But he had an idea, whereas if you look at players who achieve near the top of their performance, you know, if you get a guy who's, you know, his career is going up and down, but you can see where he's better than other places. You can see where he's near that top. If you have a lot of players who are near that top, it's sort of an indicator, you know, it's sort of one hint that there's a good working environment. Okay. He was talking about the 1950s Brooklyn Dodgers when they had season after season after season, when you had all these big team players, and he was, and I think there's something relevant. I think if you have a player who wherever he, you know, wherever he goes, sort of a guy who comes to mind is Joe Morgan. Sort of like whatever team he was with had, you know, he sort of made the environment good for everybody around him, picked everybody up. And I think that could work for managers as well. Do I know that? No. Other ways you would look at managers is sort of like how many players became regulars under him, how many players, you know, took big steps forward under him.
Those are good points, yeah.
Those, I think, are the biggest things to judge a manager. I think tactics are very small. We tend to focus on, you know, bullpen use and, you know, lineup selection. But to be honest, you could pretty much, you know, bat the pitcher second and, you know, alternate good and bad hitters in the lineup, and it's not going to make a whole lot of difference.
Yeah. I believe, just like players, that the managers have their own specific skill sets as well. For instance, some managers are just good at managing the people and they don't worry, but they just work on the relationships. I think Trey Hillman was a guy who's like that, who really focused on the relationships with the people. The baseball just came just doing baseball stuff, but he was focused on the relationships with the people. I think some of the managers handle their players well and they coach their coaches well, but other coaches, other managers might not coach their coaches as well. We're not privy to a lot of the information, right? We only see, as Jim mentioned, just when he spoke, we get to see tactics on the field. We get to see lineups, but there's a lot of detailed information that goes into game planning. We don't get to see that. And some managers are really good at that. Some probably aren't. Some might not be as interested as others in the analytical side or the other things. We don't know because we're not privy, obviously, to those meetings. But you have to be highly skilled as a manager in terms of getting players ready, making all the tactical moves, pointing out instances where your players can improve, using those teachable moments and all those things. It's sort of like being a parent of a bunch of kids, right? And trying to get them to act and behave in a certain way and then be their best. And it's almost impossible to do, especially when you're talking about over the course of a season, maybe, 80 guys, as many as 80 guys, maybe, who knows? Mm-hmm. Depends on the injuries, right? And the performances. But of course, you can't have a manager who's great at all of those things. And conversely, you won't have a manager who's terrible at all of those things. So the answer to the question is, dropping in Shingo Takatsu in a different team with different skill sets, we don't know if it's going to match his skill sets. I would say he's a really good leader, as we heard from Aaron Guile, and that maybe that's part of how he'll go about it. But and that's what that team needed. So maybe Takatsu with the Buffaloes, we'd be seeing some of the similar stuff. Yano, to me, he's a good leader, but he's also a rah-rah guy. And I don't know that would have worked with the Buffaloes in terms of him taking over that team and getting the same results. But they probably would have been better, because they just needed some better leadership, and we're seeing that. And with the Higgins interview last week, when he said great manager, and for me, I know these guys, these foreign players come over, but they don't speak the language, right? And so when they make these comments and when they experience what they experience with teams, it's kind of filtered because they don't get the true experience as a native Japanese speaker. It's all coming through. Obviously, they read the body language. They get interpreter gives them the verbiage and tells them what's being said, and they're experiencing this whole thing. But if they were Japanese, it would be a little bit different. But when he said great, I just really have not heard that from foreign players here. And I said last week, it sounded like he was saying cliche things, but with the fervor that he was saying it with was different than I've heard before. So I would have to say, I don't think so. I think Nakajima has some chemistry with this team, and that is just different right now for these guys. He's the right guy at the right moment for these players. But maybe if it were 3 years ago, he would have gotten the same results as the managers 3 years ago or 6 years ago or whenever the Buffaloes had a bunch of talent but couldn't seem to put it together on the field. Who knows? Well,
the last thing I would say about it is also, when I mentioned you can't separate the effects, creating the good working environment. It requires a lot of effort from a lot of different people. And I think one of the things that we have to give some credit to is the Buffalo's front office, which is kind of, they've taken some downers or something. Sedatives, because they used to be just out there, and I mean doing spazzing, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, all the kinds of stuff that didn't seem to make any sense. I mean, they've always had, for as long as I remember, Oryx has had tremendous scouting, and they've had really good amateur prospects. But the whole package has been disjointed. What I see now is the team popping out all these guys from the minors who are big and strong guys, and changing people's positions, and not the typical way of Oryx changing somebody's position in the last 10, in the previous 10 years was, you're going to be our second baseman, but then 3 weeks into the season, oh, we're going to try you at shortstop. And have you ever thought about being a center fielder? And at the start of the season, when I saw, when Shuhei Fukuda came back, he got kind of a late start to the season. He's in center field, and Ryoichi Adachi's at second base instead of shortstop. I'm thinking, oh man, this kind of reminds me of the old Buffaloes, but you know what? They've been there. You know, they've been staying there. You know, they're letting the team sort of, as Tyler said, be themselves, yeah, and not trying to micromanage everything.
Yep.
I like where the front office is going. I like how Nakajima is using. Now, could we measure that with analytics? I don't know. But I think if we look at and see how many Buffaloes are having peak years, you know, it's hard to tell right now because you see somebody like Yutaro Sugimoto. He had a peak year last year, and he's having a peaker year this year. So that's the answer to the question that piqued your interest.
Okay, awesome. All right, anyone else who has a question, hit us up at JBW Podcast on Twitter with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions via email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Go to the Facebook page, leave us a message there. The Reddit site, leave us a message there. Look for us on iTunes. You got anything coming up on Monday?
I do not. Lots of rants this week on jballisland.com, so keep tuning in.
All right, people, we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
And see you at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at jballisland. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag High Heat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.